Today's podcast is brought to you by Balance 7. Save $10 plus free shipping this week only with code HOWIE10 at balance7.com. Enjoy the podcast.
She's the Boston Herald's wittiest wordsmith, the last woman standing at the Whiskey Priest. Once a very legitimate magazine that we definitely didn't make up named her the Michael Jordan of radio. Wait, don't you think we're laying it on a little thick here, Grace?
Just stick to the script.
Oh, okay. Live from the Aviva Trattoria studio, it's the Grace Curley Show.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Grace Curley Show. Fox News right now has migrants living in makeshift huts under Texas Bridge, and also that the administration is not telling us how many migrants there are. But I don't understand why Fox is harping on this. Because Jen Psaki told us that most of these people that are coming, they don't even plan on staying. They're just passing through. You know, it's transitory. They're passing through on their way to somewhere else. So
they're
we just don't
here for the pony rides.
Yeah, we don't need to worry about it. What could possibly go wrong? We do have a lot to get to here. I really, before we bring on Mark Salinas for our legal segment of the show, I do really want to talk about the comedy, and I hesitate to even call it that. The late night shows that were on last night, they did a climate night of television. But before we go there, let's go to the callers. Mark, you're next with Grace and the Grace Curley Show. Go ahead, Mark.
Hey, Grace. Great show.
Thank you.
I actually am a comic here in the greater Boston area. Unfortunately, I'm a conservative comic. So between the pandemic and conservatism, you can imagine I don't work too much.
Yeah.
I think Trevor Noah has got to be on that list, Grace, because that guy has never been funny, ever.
No, you're right. And
so
Mark,
that's my vote for him.
You know what else, too, is that he's on Comedy Central, and so those commercials play sometimes. And whoever you're with when one of his commercials plays, they're so painfully unfunny that it makes the people watching it uncomfortable. Like, Will is not... you know, we watch things all the time, and he's more quiet. He doesn't talk just to talk. But if he sees a Trevor Noah ad, he looks at me and goes, is he supposed to be funny? Like, is this supposed to make me laugh? And I'm thinking, well, join the club here. That's how every single person feels. But I was just having this conversation, Mark, with Howie, and Howie said, yeah, none of these people are ever going to get fired because there's no one better because, you know, it's the decline of late night TV. And I said, it's worse than that, Mark. It's the decline of comedy because there are funny people out there, but none of them would ever be allowed on Comedy Central, on NBC, on ABC. That just would never happen, Mark, because they're not PC. They're not woke. They're not going to sugarcoat everything. And that's really when you get funny things is when you say things that, yeah, sure. Is it always hunky-dory? Is it always roses? Does it always make people feel good? No, but a lot of comedy is just funny, and you don't always know it, but when you hear it, you laugh, and even if you're not supposed to. That's part of why now at these comedy clubs in New York, like the Comedy Cellar, they don't let people bring their phones in because they know that the comedians are going to be so afraid that someone's going to videotape them, put them online, get them canceled, get them doxxed for making a joke that's not woke enough, and then ruin their lives. That's the state of comedy, Mark.
It's unbelievable. You know what? I could be doing conservative shows at the Trattoria, and we could change locations every week, and I imagine there's a lot of comedy fans out there who'd like to come see some un-PC comedy.
I think you're right about that, Mark. I think people are craving a little bit of comedy, and I know I am. One guy I really like is Nate Bargatze. He's on Netflix. He's really funny, and he's not political, and I think that's why he's so funny. It's refreshing. You know, that's the part of it, too, is that it's not just that they're not funny. They're so sanctimonious. We'll play some of this. It's really amazing how they basically had a lecture on last night in lieu of actual late night funny TV. They just lectured you for hours about how you are part of the problem. The earth is going to die. The earth is burning. And once they're done there, they probably get on their private planes. They get in their fancy Escalades and they drive away. But you are supposed to stop using so much water and recycle and all these other things that they tell you to do. And that's fine. But they don't have to do any of it. That's the main point here. Adam, you're next with Grace and the Grace Curley Show. Go ahead, Adam.
Thanks, Grace. You know, this. I think the whole thing with climate change is a little bit of a joke.
and very woke. Here's the situation. Back in the, I'm old enough to realize back in the 70s, there was a huge front page on the Time magazine, The Big Chill. We're going to go into a mini ice age. That's what they claimed. Every scientist was on board with this. Every scientist. And now it's just the reverse. Well, if you look historically, and I'm going back several thousand years, the Earth is actually cooler than it is, or it is right now. So we're just getting into this, oh my God, we've got a hurricane, we've got this, we've got that. This has all happened before. There's nothing new. And how arrogant we are as people, as human beings, to think that the Earth is covered by two-thirds ocean, and we literally operate on a very small part of the planet, and we just think we can change it? I don't think so. I think Mother Nature is going to do what it's going to do, and that's the way it's been since time immemorial. So, Grace, thank you for the time, and love the show. Take care.
Thank you, Adam. And you're right. It is arrogance. I always think about this, too, with politicians. You know, forget the late-night guys. I know they're going to fix it. You know, they're going to save the world. But with politicians, it's like, all right, so you can't figure out how to balance a budget. You can't figure out how to fill a pothole. You can't figure out how to secure a border. You can't figure out any of these basic things. But what they do think they can crack is how to fix the temperature of Earth. Like, that's on their list of, you know, we can handle that. We should be able to put a pin in that and figure this out. No! Start small. Isn't that the basic thing you learn when you're a little kid? Bite off a small piece and chew it and see if you can do it. You can't fix anything else, but you're going to fix the entire globe. Huh? Color me skeptic, but I'm a little bit unsure that you're going to be able to figure this out. Let's also go here, though. We have to play some of this. So if you weren't aware, they had this Climate Night TV thing, and all of the seven comedy legends got together to talk about how the Earth is doomed. They even brought in Shawn Mendes, that pop star, to tell us about how everything is terrible. And I think at this point we have like 4.5 to 5 years left on planet Earth. So keep that in mind. Now, I want to start with Stephen Colbert, because to Adam's point that he just said, it's specifically Americans that are very arrogant when it comes to this, because we think we can change it despite the fact that no other countries are going to do as much as we are. So we're going to kill jobs here. We're going to make sure that we're not energy independent for this idea that we're going to fix the Earth temperature by doing that. Now, when you look at other places like China, they don't care about that. They have no intention of doing that. They're not going to ruin their economy. They're not going to make less money for the Earth. They're just not going to do that. But don't worry, we'll make all those sacrifices and we'll end up being America last, which is what everybody wants, I guess. Now, Stephen Colbert thinks it's different. Listen to his take. This is Cut 10.
One recent survey found that most Americans do not believe they will be personally affected by global warming. Americans treat climate science like soccer. We know it's out there and it really matters to the rest of the world, but no one can make us care.
What about China? What do they get a mention from Stephen Colbert? Or is he too afraid to mention that China doesn't really help much either? That they're, every time we make up these new rules about ways to be more green, you know who's always exempt from it? China. We always write down like, oh yeah, in 2065, China will have to get on board too. Mark that down.
Also, I will not be personally impacted by something that happens in the year 2229. Yeah. I'm sorry.
And I am personally impacted by things that I know Stephen Colbert is not impacted by, like inflation, taxes. It's all these other things. Like, I love how he acts as if Americans don't have their priorities straight. A lot of people who are trying to raise kids are more worried about their kids being brainwashed or having to wear a mask all day in school. They're not that worried about, like Jared said, something that's going to happen in 1,000 years. And he thinks that's because they're stupid. They're not as smart as him. But it's really because some of us have to live in the real world. Some of us have to live in reality.
I've always said that about these celebrities and climate change. Like, if you don't have real problems, you have time to sit around and think about this stuff. But for regular people who have real problems, tangible, problems, this just doesn't hit the list for you.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Let's do this. This is another Stephen Colbert. This is another hilarious cut of Stephen Colbert. Cut 11.
We don't have a minute to waste because climate change is here and it's bad, y'all. This year alone, we saw fires out west, flooding in Europe and China, and multiple hurricanes that flooded the New York City subway system.
Ladies and gentlemen, stand clear of the closing doors and the apocalyptic underground tidal wave.
This was the clip where I really thought to myself, Johnny Carson would be stunned. If you brought him back and he was looking at the TV and watching this, he would go, what is this supposed to be? What? Where's the... Oh, they don't do late night shows anymore? What is this? Is this a PSA? Is this a college class on global warming? This is supposed to be entertainment. This is supposed to make people laugh. And it gets even worse. It gets even worse because Seth Meyers had on John Forbes Kerry to talk about climate change. And he doesn't even have a live studio audience, so it's painful to watch. And they start talking about BTS, which I guess is some boy band, I think from...
They're a K-pop band from Korea.
K-pop band from Korea. Thank you, Jared. And so they start talking about BTS. And I want you guys to listen to this carefully because for someone who's there to be the climate czar, the special envoy of global warming, Kerry mentions airplanes in an interesting way. Cut one.
The UN had maybe, and again, you're a big star, special envoy, but on Monday, BTS performed.
I know, they're great.
You're John Kerry's a BTS fan?
I watched the video of their, you know, what is it, Permission to Dance or something? It's fantastic.
Yeah, they know what they're doing, right?
Well, you know, you see them. I travel a lot nowadays, and you see them in all these advertisements. You know, when they're prepping the airplane, they're doing one thing. Yeah. It's kind of crazy. You want to get up and...
No, I would love you
but they're
not
fun.
To.
A lot of people I know would love me not to.
I don't understand what's happening.
Where are we?
I don't know who I feel worse for in that situation. Like Seth Meyers having to interview John Kerry or John Kerry having to sit there for that. I almost feel like John Kerry could be funnier if he was just by himself. At least we'd see John Kerry being John Kerry. Seth Meyers is kind of killing the vibe.
I mean, his chin alone is worth like 3 slapstick laughs.
Now, Samantha Bee was talking. This was her hilarious open, all right? This is cut 12.
Powering my entire studio with Earth's strongest renewable resource, my muscles. Yep, the energy generated from this bike is running our entire show because climate change has arrived faster than many of us thought. No, not as fast as me shredding on this bike.
Ha ha ha. Oh, boy. And then lastly, one of the, I think it was Stephen Colbert, had on Shawn Mendes, who's a pop star, and he empathizes with people who feel like the planet is doomed, cut 13.
Yeah, it's there. So I empathize with the doom. I feel the doom.
But you can't give into it.
You can't give into it.
No.
No, of course not. I just had to say Greg Gutfeld must be like, it's like taking candy from a baby. Like, this is what I'm going up against. At least give me a challenge. I'm going up against a boring diatribe given by these elitist losers who all they want to do is lecture people and virtue signal. And I'm supposed to, if I'm Greg Gutfeld, I'm like, okay, so it looks like this is going to be good for a long time because there's no competition whatsoever. There's no comedy. Because anything that they could laugh at, they can't laugh at themselves. That's out of the question. They can't make fun of anything because that's not woke. So they're left to just tell us how wonderful they are and how evil we all are. I'd love to see the ratings for that thing. I'm going to actually Google that. I'm going to Google the ratings during the break. Jared, let's talk a little bit about the thunderstorm and give the audience an idea of how great this product is, because I use it a lot in the kitchen when I cook, but you use it in your car for your allergies.
Yes, it is one of the best things I've ever used for my allergies because it doesn't just cover up odors and things like that. It actually gets rid of them. It eliminates them. It purifies them, if you will, which is why it's called the Thunderstorm Air Purifier. And I like it because I can just plug it into the little USB cable that comes with it, plug it into my car, turn it on, and within minutes, if whatever's in the car, if it's pollen, allergens, nasty stuff, if it's 42 fast food bags in the back seat, anything hypothetically that could be happening, the thunderstorm gets rid of it. And when now that traffic is back, you're sitting in your car for at least an hour and a half one way every day. You want to be breathing that purified air.
Yes, and the best part is you don't have to replace any air filters. Some of these units that you'll find that aren't the Eden Pure can cost you up to $600, and they're big and bulky. But this is a small product that is very powerful. So go to EdenPureDeals.com, click on my name, and put in code word GRACE3 to save $200 for their special 3-pack. That's EdenPureDeals.com. Click on my name and use code word GRACE3. I see you on the lines. We will take your calls. 844-500-4242. This is the Grace Curley Show.
Follow Grace on Twitter at @G_Curley. Grace Curley. She's the cool kid at the lunch table.
I want a hamburger. No, a cheeseburger. I want a hot dog. I want a milkshake. I want potatoes.
You'll get nothing and like it.
This is the Grace Curley Show.
Welcome back to the Grace Curley Show. I'm very excited. Mark Salinas is coming up in the next segment, and he's our legal expert from Silva and Salinas. And what we've started doing lately is rather than go over just the pop culture stories or the political stories, we take questions from the audience, legal questions, common legal questions, and he gives us his take on them. And it's really interesting. It's juicy. You know, you figure out what's on people's minds. Now, before we bring in Mark, let's go to the calls here. Mary, you're next with Grace on the Grace Curley Show. Go ahead, Mary.
Good afternoon, Grace. We have all these people worried about climate control and what it does to the earth. And, you know, they don't even think about what the solar is doing, what the windmills are doing, what the batteries are doing. And these lithium mines that are opening up, and as soon as that lithium hits air and water, it's poison, and the cancer rate is unbelievable. And the children that are being used in Africa for mining that, let alone, I don't know what they'll use here when they in the one in Arizona, but everything there is polluting. They aren't following the ripple effect forward, like the solar panels. They last 25 years. They still don't know what to do with it, and it is hazardous waste. And same with the windmills. They don't know what to do with it. You just leave it there to rust. And, you know, the sad part thing, Grace, is that my grandchildren will never know mountains without these cell towers on top of them.
Yeah, and you know what's interesting, Mary, that you bring up the lithium, because I was talking earlier in the show about how the mainstream media is 6 months behind. But in the case of the lithium batteries, they're like 6 decades behind. The LA Times had a piece out in the last couple months being like, lithium is actually kind of bad, too. So these cars, these electric cars might be damaging. It's like, yeah, yeah, a lot of people have been saying that. It's nice of you guys to join us here in 2021. A little late, but welcome to the party. Brian, you're next with Grace on the Grace Curley Show. Go ahead, Brian.
Hi, Grace. First, I just want to say that, you know, Samantha Bee, she doesn't have a show anymore without Trump in office. That's all her ads was Trump, Trump, Trump every night. Like, I never watched the show, but when you're watching the station she was on, that's all she talked about. She's no longer on, as far as I know, because she doesn't have, you know, Trump to talk about.
Yeah, and you could really say that about all of them, Brian, but you're specifically right about Samantha Bee. She was a real Trump hater.
Right. And the second thing was, you know, back in the 80s and early 90s and stuff, when Saturday Night Live was funny, and they'd make fun of, you know, Reagan, Bush, the Bushes. They'd make fun of Democrats, Dukakis, Clinton, whatever. I laughed at both of them. It was funny. I laughed when they made fun of Reagan as a conservative, and I made, you know, when they made fun of Dukakis, and you laugh. It's funny. It's just, that's, you know, that's what comedy's about. You know?
Yeah.
You gotta laugh a little.
And Brian, I've actually, I've seen people try to understand why that changed, and something that I think is very possible is that they used to build both caricatures and both, you know, when they would do sketches, there was always a little bit of human to the characters, you know? If they were making fun of Reagan, if they were making fun of Bush, if they were making fun of Clinton, there was always a human element to it. And when they started making fun of Trump, they really did make him out to be this monster. They lost that compassionate kind of funny edge, if that makes sense. 844-500-4242. We'll be right back with Mark Salinas. This is The Grace Curley Show.
Live from the Aviva Trattoria Studio.
All right, so I was just referencing, and I didn't do a good job of describing it, but I knew there was something out there that I had once read about why SNL and all these impersonations they were doing of Trump, why it went downhill so quickly, and why comedies just stopped being funny. And like my last caller said, you used to laugh at both sides. That was kind of before my time. But there was a time where adults would watch SNL, and they'd be of one political persuasion and they could laugh at their preferred politicians getting made fun of. And I found it. It's from National Review. It's pretty old, but it said, it became clear from the clips chosen that politics are not SNL's forte. Its cast of performers and writers have forsaken the humanizing point of comedy and satire for obvious personal prejudice, the last resort of pundits who can't sustain argument. Although the mean girl frat boy tendency was always there, performers such as Phil Hartman, Dan Aykroyd, Dana Carvey, and a few others managed to balance caricature with affection throughout the Clinton and two Bush administrations. But the latter is when know-it-allism began to prevail, turning repulsive as network media fought back against the 2000 election. Eventually, these mainstream comedians lost their sense of humor and became self-congratulatory jesters to the court of Obama. But I think that key right there is balancing caricature with affection. It's like anything else. You make fun of someone, and if it's good-natured, people can laugh at it. But it's when it becomes so sanctimonious that people get turned off by it. And that's what all comedy is now. I wouldn't even classify any of this as comedy. It's just virtue signaling. It's just telling people you're better than them. And it's like, who wants to tune in for that? Who wants to watch 45 minutes of being told that they're a credulous boomer rube? I don't want to do that. All right, now joining me now is Mark Salinas from Silva and Salinas. And I'm glad you're here, Mark. We are going to get into the legal questions. But first, I want you to partake in the poll question. Today's poll question is brought to you by Kennedy Carpet. Howie's used Kennedy for decades. I'm going to get some carpets from Kennedy in my living room and in my dining room. I'm very excited about that. For all of your flooring needs and carpet cleaning, go to kennedycarpet.com today. Jared, what is the poll question and what are the results thus far?
Who is the least funny comedian? Samantha Bee, Seth Meyers, Stephen Colbert, Jimmy Fallon, or Jimmy Kimmel?
Based off last night's climate TV extravaganza, I'm going to say Seth Meyers because he actually sat through an interview with John Kerry and it was painful. Mark?
Going to go with Jimmy Kimmel.
Jimmy Kimmel. Yeah, that's a good one. And Jimmy Kimmel.
Wrong entry.
Jimmy Kimmel is a very interesting case because he used to be funny.
Yeah,
before
absolutely.
He got woke, he was very funny.
Yeah, everything falls flat with him now, it seems like to me.
Yes, I would agree. You know what? You know what was the turning point was when he was crying about Cecil the Lion.
Oh,
when he got on TV and cried about that. That's when I was like, ooh, this is not going to end well. All right, Jared, what are the results?
Samantha Bee is in the lead at 32%, 28% for Stephen Colbert, 25% for Jimmy Kimmel, 9% for Jimmy Fallon, and 7% for Seth Meyers.
All right, so now we take questions from our audience, our listeners, and a lot of them are legal questions, and we ask Mark for his best take on it. So, Mark, are you ready to go?
Yeah, let's go.
All right, the first question. Someone is posting nasty things about me on social media. What can I do to stop this?
I guess it depends on what they're saying. So, you know, if somebody is posting something on social media and it's false, not an opinion, but it's a false fact, and it's rising to the level of something where it might be actually damaging your reputation in the community, you might have something there. I mean, we do live in a country where free speech is still a thing, and people can have opinions about other people's what they do for work, what they do at school. But where people get into trouble is if they're posting false facts and it's something that will really hurt them, their reputation.
Now, it's interesting that this is the first question, because one of my questions this week was about Trump, and he's filing a lawsuit about his taxes and his cousin Mary Trump and how they were trying to damage his reputation. But when it comes to slander or libel, and I know one of them has spoken, one of them has written, but it also changes based off if you're a public figure. It's a lot harder to sue for these things if you are a public figure. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. If you're a political figure, if you are in the entertainment industry and you put yourself out there and that's part of your lifestyle, then you have to be able to expect some criticism. But again, it does also apply that if you're putting out false facts, if you're putting out something as fact that is untrue and you can show damages as a result, there have been even celebrities that have brought legal actions and have been successful. My understanding is that this new lawsuit with Donald Trump, he's looking for something like $100 million. So, you know, I guess if you're playing in that type of, in that atmosphere, the damages can get pretty big.
Yeah, no, definitely. All right, next question, shifting gears here. I am considering a divorce. How does a court decide if I have to pay alimony?
Ooh, that's a good one. Okay,
alimony.
I know. The laws changed a few years ago in Massachusetts, and now with alimony, in terms of the amount of alimony, that's really something that a judge would decide. It typically, you're not going to see it exceed 30 to 35% of the difference between the two incomes. And in terms of how long somebody pays alimony, that is set by statute. It's a law, and it's a sliding scale. The longer you've been married, the longer you would be liable potentially to pay alimony. And if you've been married, if you're in a 20-year marriage, you could be paying alimony indefinitely.
And isn't there usually a rule too? I've heard of this before, but this could be wrong. This is why it's good, because I have all these legal things that I think I know, but I'm probably wrong. But I've heard before that if you get divorced and one partner has to pay the other partner alimony, then if that person who's getting the alimony gets remarried, then the deal's off.
Yes, that is true. So if you get remarried, and even if you are cohabitating with somebody else.
Oh, really?
You are, yep. If you're shacking up with somebody else and you can prove that in court, you might have a legal argument there to say alimony should be terminated.
Wow, yeah. Interesting.
A lot of people make decisions on their personal lives based on that.
Yeah, no, I'm sure. I am divorced and paying child support. How long and how much should I be paying? Can it be modified? I see this with celebrities sometimes where depending on how much money, like there was a case with Kelly Clarkson, she's getting divorced, and her husband wanted something in the hundreds of thousands of dollars a month for their kids' child support. But that's because she makes like $1 million a month.
Yeah. I mean, child support is always income driven, and there's child support guidelines that spell out a formula to determine how much somebody is going to pay another spouse. And then when you get into a very, very high income bracket, the child support guidelines sort of go away, and the court is going to look at, you know, what's fair and what's in the best interest of the child. And in terms of how long they pay it for, you're going to be on paying alimony at least until the child is 18, and potentially up as old as 23 if the child is enrolled in college and still principally dependent on mom or dad.
It's like the health insurance rule.
Yeah.
Like it gets higher and higher and higher.
And you know, the laws are vastly different across the country. I mean, I can't speak to New Hampshire. I've heard a little bit about it, but I know that they're quite different, and they cut off child support much sooner, as does many states across the country. But Massachusetts is very generous with that.
Now, here's a question. Sometimes I hear about these athletes, they get divorced, they have to pay child support, and they pay in the thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars a month. Does the court make sure that that's actually going towards the child? I guess, here, you know what? I'll put it in a lyric. Kanye West once famously rapped, she was supposed to buy your son... Tyco with your money. She went to the doctor, got lipo with your money.
One of my favorite lines right there.
In other words, do they regulate where this money is going to?
You know, bottom line is really no. The support goes to the other parent, and the court does not get involved
with how
micromanaging it. No. And the idea is that if one parent is getting, you know, $5,000 a month in child support, and that allows them to live in a six-bedroom house somewhere, you know, that the benefit of that does flow down to the child because the child's living in the house as well.
Right.
And when you get into really, really the super rich and the celebrities, I have heard of circumstances where there are trusts set up and things like that to make sure that the money isn't going somewhere it shouldn't.
Got it. All right. Now, here's an interesting question. One listener writes, my neighbor has security cameras pointed at my house. Is this legal?
This one's been coming up a lot more ever since these cameras are so much more available everywhere. You know, it depends what they're doing with the cameras. So if you have a camera in your driveway and you happen to be catching like a corner of somebody else's house, you know, you're not going to get anywhere with that. But what the court's going to look at is two things. One, what's the level of intrusion? And, you know, how many cameras are there? So if you have six cameras pointed at somebody's house and it's going into their kitchen window, you're going to have a problem there. And they're also going to look at what the intent is. But if you have cameras on your house and you're incidentally, you know, picking up videos of Bob taking out his trash, you know, don't go to court. You're not going to get anywhere.
Yeah, but you know what's interesting, too, is that those cameras, like there was a case a few years ago, might have been a year ago, where a guy killed his wife and the neighbor's camera actually caught the truck. Like the neighbor's camera was a huge part in cracking the case because he had the video of what time the guy left his driveway in the truck.
Well, you know, part of my practice is criminal defense. And when we're investigating crimes, if one of our clients is accused of a crime, we get investigators out. And one of the things we start looking at is we will case the neighborhood and we'll see if there's video cameras out there to catch something that might help our clients. Or, you know, if it hurts our clients, you get that too. And law enforcement techniques, they're on top of that too. You remember with Aaron Hernandez, they had a lot of those, their own video cameras that were picking up.
Yes, yep. Yes.
And so it's amazing, you know, and people end up, the real beauties are the ones that videotape themselves doing stuff that maybe they shouldn't be doing.
Yeah, that's tough.
The state police, if they're investigating a crime, they're going to look outside the window there and they're going to see those Ring cameras and they're going to, you know, they're going to go to court and get a subpoena for those records.
Oof. All right, now we have one. My car got wrecked after hitting a pothole. Can I sue?
Pothole in Massachusetts? Come on.
I know. This must be from somewhere else because our roads are heavenly here.
So there's a couple different sets of rules there or laws, depending on if it's a state highway or if it's a city-maintained highway. I'll tell you, my recollection was that if it's a state highway, you cannot recover for any type of property damage, but you can for personal injury. And it is capped, and I'll tell everybody that if your car is damaged or you have a real bad accident as a result of a pothole, get to a lawyer quickly because what's universal about these is a very short statute that you have to inform the city. It's like usually like 30 days, and because they want to get out there and see if it's really a pothole or you just have a couple too many the night before and hit a curb.
Ugh. My ex-boyfriend, this is the last one, and then I just want to ask you about the Gabby Petito situation, but this is the last question. My ex-boyfriend took my dog. What can I do to get my dog back? This is like Legally Blonde. I'm taking the dog.
Don't get me started on dogs.
So sad.
I know,
but
I know.
You shouldn't. This is a tip for everyone, okay? Before I let Mark, he's the expert, so don't listen to me. But my tip for young couples is don't get a dog together because I know people who have dogs together and then they break up and then they're sharing pet support or pet custody of a dog. And then every other weekend, the dog's going from one house to the other. It's too much.
Oh, God. It's going to hurt every fiber of my soul to say this, but under the law, pets are considered personal property. And so if you can make a case that it was your dog, you purchased the dog, and you have the evidence to back it up, and somebody takes your dog at the end of a relationship, you can sue for that property back. But an interesting fact is that if you are in the unfortunate circumstance where you're in like a domestic abusive relationship and there's a restraining order involved, the courts actually have the power to make orders regarding dog custody.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Now, Mark, last question. Have you been following this Gabby Petito case? And are you as amazed as I am that this man, Brian Laundry, was able to get out of his house with all those reporters there?
Yeah, it's just unbelievable. In today's day and age, it's really hard to be somebody who's going to evade the law. Like what we're talking about, there's cameras everywhere.
Right.
And so it's really difficult for somebody to be underground for a long time. This isn't like the 80s and the early 90s when you saw you see people disappear.
Right.
Whitey Bulger, for example, how long he was on the lam. Now, you know, people pick up their cell phones and they say something's wrong and the police are on it. And then they're getting these cameras and they're finding somebody. It's going to be interesting to see what happened with him. Is he on the lam or something, you know, tragic happened?
This is an obvious question, but do you think he had help? in getting out, I mean, in escaping?
Probably.
He was with his family for a while.
You know, there are probably help in the sense that there's people out there that know things that aren't saying anything, for sure. I think a lot of people know and are careful about the fact that if you get involved with something like that, it's very, very easy to be charged with, as an accessory to murder, and you don't want to be in that boat.
Whew. All right, Mark, thank you so much for joining the Grace Curley Show. Silva and Salinas, if people have questions for you and they want to reach out, where can they call?
The easiest thing to do is call us. Our phone number is 978-741-2000. They can ask for myself or my law partner, Donna Silva. Online, on the web, you can find us at www.silvasalinas.com.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Mark. We'll be back with Howie Carr. Don't go anywhere. This is the Grace Curley Show.
You can call her late for dinner. Just don't call her Gracie. It's the Grace Curley Show. Start the afternoon off right.
Now what? Now comes a girl. Here she is. This is just the best part of my day.
It's Grace Curley.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Grace Curley Show. I will not be in tomorrow, but I have a great fill-in. Toby Leary's going to be here, so it's going to be a great show. And we had a great week. It was really fun, and today was great. We went over a lot of different things, and now I am joined by Howard Lawrence Carr. And if you're watching on the Rumble Cam, you might be saying to yourself, why was Howie just cracking up? Well, I just showed Howie a photo. It's very interesting, and I don't want this to destroy anyone's faith in the integrity of the maskers. But there's a photo of Boris Johnson, UK Prime Minister, and President Joe Biden sitting at the Oval Office, and they both have masks on. And then right next to it, there's another photo of the two of them without their masks on. Biden has his arm around Boris Johnson, and they're laughing together. So I don't understand, Howie. Does the virus not affect people when they're standing up? Is that the deal?
They're beautiful people. You know, they're very sophisticated, so they don't have to worry anyway. By the way, did you see that a new poll came out of Michigan, and Gretchen Whitmer is six points down to the former police chief of Detroit, who's, you know, who's not the most scintillating candidate in the world, but he's not Gretchen Whitmer, so he's 6 points ahead. And she came out with her new proposal. I guess it's a new budget that's coming out. And guess what's banned in the budget proposal in an outside rider section?
What?
A vaccine passports and mask mandates. I think she's following the science of public opinion polls.
Well, it's interesting too, because obviously this is different with Eric Adams in New York. That was a mayoral race, but like you said, a lot of these people who are getting elected, they're not perfect, but beggars can't be choosers. And right now in this country, when we're dealing with complete progressive nuts, we're all beggars at this point. We need like a semblance of normalcy.
Right. It's at some point too, you know, when people do this to you for month after month after month, they shut down the economy, lockdowns, they ruin your kids' education, they cost you your job, they shut down your favorite restaurant, they close the golf course, the gym, the church, everything. At some point, you just have to punish them at the ballot box.
Yes. And
you just have to oust them. Even if you get somebody equally bad, you just have to punish these people for the rotten behavior they've exhibited, whether it's Gretchen Whitmer or Charlie Parker.
Well, I think that was
Tim Janey most recently in the city of Boston.
I think that was the most disappointing part about the failed recall of Gavin Newsom, because I felt like, and I know it's California and I know how blue it is, but it really did bring me back to what Trump said when he was running for president, which is, what do you have to lose? Like, if you're in California right now, taxes are so high, homeless people are everywhere, there's poop on the sidewalk, there's syringes on the sidewalk. How could it get any worse? Why not take a chance? Like, wouldn't you rather just try someone new?
Yeah,
but they don't want to.
I would. I don't, you know, they said there's been some post and most post-mortems that, you know, that tying Larry Elder to Trump killed him. I'm not sure I believe that, though.
Howie Carr is coming up next. Don't go anywhere. I'll see you guys next week, but tune in tomorrow for Toby from 12 to 3. This is The Grace Curley Show.